tuned to Yesterday, bringing you programs from radio's golden years. I'm Mark Levonier. In this hour, drama. Later on, it's a 1944 broadcast of Everything for the Boys. But first, the CBS Radio Workshop with the play You Could Look It Up from July 7th, 1957 on CBS.
Drive was fouled just by inches. Bugs Courtney can certainly clobber that ball. Well, here we are, first of the night, two men out, two on base, and the count on Bugs, three balls, two strikes. Score nothing to nothing. This is Del Sharbert at Ringo Stadium in St. Louis. You know, if St. Louis wins today, it'll be a clean sweep, having won a doubleheader 7-2 and 10-0 yesterday. Looks like the league leaders are fading pretty fast, and St. Louis might take over. Well, now the outfield has moved back into position, and here's the pitch. Ball four. Bugs walks, filling the bases. Now up comes their slugger, Hank Meadors. Hey, wait a minute. There's a terrific rhubarb. It looks like a youngster coming up to the plate. Hey, check this guy. No, it can't be a youngster. He has a big cigar in his mouth. Little bat and a big cigar. Well, here's the scoop on the rhubarb. For the first time in big league baseball, we have batting in the cleanup position for the league-leading champs, Pearl DeMonzo, a midget.
You are listening to the CBS Radio Workshop, dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind. Today we salute two great American institutions, the institution of James Grover Thurber, whose penetrating vision into the word and line has brought so much happiness to so many. And to the institution of baseball, a slice of Americana that quickens the pulse of the nation with the battle cry, play ball. Our efforts today are directed to the little leaguers with stars in their eyes, to the players in the minors hoping for that call which will take them to the majors and their big chance, to the players in the majors who this day are struggling so hard to live up to that promise. To the thousands of grandmothers who died so abruptly of a Wednesday afternoon, so that their devoted grandsons could pay them homage in ballparks all over our nation. And to you husbands who can't remember an anniversary or a birthday, but when called on can give the batting averages in both leagues for the past 20 years, we challenge you with James Thurber's You Could Look It Up.
When most people in our town think of baseball, they think of Squawks McGrew. He came by this handle because of a peculiar quality of voice. When things were fouled up and the team was in a slump, he'd start screaming, and then it would happen. Suddenly, he'd almost lose his voice and end up squealing like a little girl whose doll had been stepped on. All this was several years ago, when McGrew was a manager and making one of the greatest names in baseball. Now the old boy had come home to rock away his last innings. I was making my annual visit. My paper sent me to get a story to find out who would play in the World Series. McGrew had an uncanny genius for prophecy, speaking a language all his own, and for baseball.
Hello, Larry. Come on in.
Thanks, Mr. McGrew.
Now, don't tell me, boy, that another year has passed.
Right, so. Well, Mr. McGrew, I won't take up much of your time. You've always said the teams in first place the 4th of July usually win the series. This year, it's the Yankees and Cincinnati. You think that's the way it's going to wind up?
No, don't hurry me, boy. Let's set out here on the porch and rock a while, Speaking of those teams in first place and the 4th of July and all that, I'd like to tell you how once we led the whole league by about 7-8 games till about mid-September. Within a few days, that margin was trimmed down so as you could got it in the eye of a thimble, just being about half a game ahead of St. Louis. Now, we've just been belted by Pittsburgh, was headed down to Columbus for an exhibition game. What a slump we was in. The boys run around snarling at each other, eating bad, sleeping worse. Batting for the team average is maybe hot 186. Half the time, nobody would speak, nobody else, lest it was to ball them out. Oh, son, this is probably a long way to tell you. Would you like some lemonade?
No, thanks, Mr. McGrew. Tell me, what happened in Columbus?
Well, even Columbus shut us out, 3-2. Don't mind telling you, son, I was mighty near crazy, what with the hitting and all. While we was at the Chittenden Hotel, really snarling, believe me, I wished I was dead. I was sitting at the bar of the old Chittenden, killing time, waiting on the train to St. Louis, when up comes Bugs Courtney.
Squawk!
Get lost, Bugs.
Bugs, you gotta get in the dining room. The boys are killing each other. Whitey Cott just hit Billy Klinger between the eyes with a T-bone steak.
Let them blind each other. Can't none of them see anyways. Go on, beat it, Bugs.
Look, Squawk, if you want a bar club...
I said beat it. And remember, Bugs, the Wright brothers have still got to build an airship big enough for you to hit with a ball bat. Oh, bartender.
Yes, Mr. McGrew?
How I pity me, brother, how I pity me. I thought I was the manager of a great ball team. Instead of that, I'm managing a bunch of blindfolded circus clowns.
Are you right? I seen that game today, Junior. You ain't got no ball club. What you got there, Junior, is a sideshow.
Bartender. Bartender, bring me some black coffee. I must be having the DTs. I swear I've been talking to a 2.5-foot man.
It's all right, Mr. McGrew. This little guy here is Pearl Dumanville.
Pearl Dumanville? Pearl? I thought that was a girl's name.
Hold it, Junior.
What do you mean, Junior?
Don't pay him no attention. Pearl calls everybody Junior, because it always turns out he's a year older than anybody else.
Oh, yeah? Well, how old is he?
How old are you, Junior?
Who, me? I'm 53.
Well, I'm 54.
Okay. What do you have, Dad?
Same as you, Junior. Give me a lift up in the bar, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Right this way, folks. Come right in and see the greatest collection of freaks in the world. See the armless pitcher. See the infielders with five subs. See the armless batter.
Come on, boss. The fellas want to get out of here. People are staring at us.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Pearl, I want you to meet my clowns. Clowns, this is Pearl Dumanville, a Mansour of the old school. Now, watch it, Pearl. Don't shake hands with them. The fingers are made of chalk. It'll bust right off in your paws.
Why, you're making a girl. Come on, in, folks. Step right up and see the legless base runner. See the outfielders with butterfingers. See the southpaw with the arm of a child.
All right, quiet, fellas. Whitey, Hank, want you two to bring the Pearl along. He's coming as mascot.
What?
And I'm holding you two guys responsible.
Hey, wait a minute, Junior. How am I going without no toothbrush? What am I going to do with no other suit?
The boys will take care of you. Okay, I'm going to check out. I'll see you at the train. See the guys with the glass arms, eh? See the guys with the cast iron brains. See the players with feet on their wrists.
Shorty, why don't you go home now, huh? Come morning and McGrew will forget all about you.
Yeah. He probably thinks you were something he's seen in a nightmare, and he won't laugh so easy in the morning either. Now, why don't you go on home?
Nick. Skidoo. And 23 for you. Mr. Pearl de Monville is heading for St. Luke.
Hey, McGrew, remember where you found this? Or maybe you think they come with a breakfast on this tray.
Sneeze, your brains is dusty.
Here, wipe your face. Sit down here, Bugs.
There's a real couple of Damon and Phidiases across the aisle, ain't they?
Hi, guys.
Whitey, we got enough trouble around here today. Why don't you go and play with your midget friend?
What kind of a crack is that?
Oh,
I have to have it, you wise guy.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, give me
rash. Yeah. That's what I got for a ball club, Mr. Dumont. They're wrestlers.
A man can't be good at everything, but he ought to be good at something.
Oh, I wish I was manager of an old lady's sewing circle instead of a ball club.
That's great, Junior. That's great. You are. You are.
You little
fraud. Oh, all right. Lay off, Hank. Now listen, you guys. If any of you hurt Pearl, I'll break your neck. Pearl here is the official mascot. And I want him to have a miniature suit and everything, just like the rest of us. And Hank, I'm holding you responsible.
Thanks a lot.
Well, the first thing you're going to do, Pearl, is get rid of that cigar. And if you wear our suit on the field and go insulting it, I am going myself to take you out of the zoo and feed you to the bears. Quiet! Let him... Blow smoke in my face, will you?
Hold it. I told you, no trouble. If anything happens to him, Hank, you're responsible. Now, remember, you guys, we have a doubleheader tomorrow. So see if you can try hard enough not to disgrace Pearl and me. Okay. Now, clear out. Pearl and I have some serious talking to do. Pearl, I tell you, them clowns are sure taking a lot out of me. I wished I was dead.
What makes you think you ain't, Junior? What makes you think you ain't?
Oh, now let you off, will you? Pearl, tell me the truth. How old are you?
I told you, 54.
Okay. How tall are you?
I'm 31 and a half... No, 32 inches tall.
32 inches... That's fine. Tomorrow, I'm taking out legal and proper papers constituting one Pearl de Monville a bona fide member of this former ball club. Maybe that'll shame them big babies into getting in there and swinging, knowing I can replace any of them with a midget. I beg your pardon, Pearl.
Okay, Junior.
Yes, sir. I'm going to make it all legal and proper.
Drive was fouled just by inches. Bugs Courtney can certainly clobber that ball. Well, here we are, first of the night. Two men out, two on base, and the count on Bugs, three balls, two strikes. Score nothing to nothing. This is Del Sharbert at Ringo Stadium in St. Louis. If St. Louis wins today, it'll be a clean sweep, having won a doubleheader 7-2 and 10-0 yesterday. It looks like the league leaders are fading fast, and St. Louis will take over. Well, now the outfield has moved back into position, and here's the pitch. Ball four. Bugs walks, filling the bases. And now up comes their slugger, Hank Metters. Wait a minute. There's a terrific rhubarb. It looks like a youngster coming up to the plate. Check it, Ted. No, it can't be a youngster. He has a big cigar in his mouth. A little bat and a big cigar. Oh, well, now, here's the scoop on the rhubarb. For the first time in big league baseball, we have batting in the cleanup position for the league-leading champ, Pearl de Monville, a midget. Well, this rhubarb seems to be growing and growing. I'm sure it's going to be a few minutes before they can get this game going again. So we've sent Ted down on the field with a portable mic. Can you hear me, Ted? Ladies and gentlemen, I see the St. Louis manager is up out of the dugout, and everyone is screaming and yelling. Again, we'll try to take you down on the field. Ted, come in. Ted, can you hear me? Come in. Come in.
Okay, Dell. I'm down here, and the pandemonium here is terrific. We'll try to get as much of the conversation as possible. Here's McGrew and Umpire Kelly screaming at each other.
I'm telling you, McGrew. I'm telling you, get a batter up there, or you'll forfeit the game.
I told you I'm sending in a pinch hitter. There he is. Pearl DeMont, Bill. You stand right beside me, Pearl.
You got yourself a boy, Junior. Watch it, McGrew. Here comes that squarehead, the St. Louis manager.
McGrew, what are you trying to pull? Are you trying to disgrace baseball? They ought to bring the funny wagon for you. You know there ain't no pitcher alive can pitch no ball for no pitcher.
It's all proper and legal. Here are the papers. Kelly signed with the owners, okay for the manager. Here you are. Now look it up.
I don't care what no papers say. He's a midget.
Doesn't look right to me. He's using a kid's bat.
I don't care about any of that. But McGrew, where you been keeping him all season?
McGrew, maybe we had better get out of here. Here comes the field. I'll follow the rule book.
Lay off that mouth,
Orson.
Well, looks like it's legal and proper, just like McGrew said. All right, get back to your places. Get back in the dugout. Now, if there's any more screaming here, St. Louis will forfeit the game. Okay, McGrew, since you're a half-ball player in there.
Okay.
Pearl, you just stand up there and hold that bat on your shoulder. There ain't a man in the world who can throw three strikes in there before he can throw four balls.
I get it, Junior. You'll have to walk me, and that will force in the winning run.
That's it, Pearl, that's it. Just stand there. Don't let me down.
I won't. Junior,
light my cigar for me. You and me is gonna make history. This is Del Charbit up in the press box again. Thank you, Ted. Thanks for that clarification of what's going on down there. Well, we are... Hey, wait a minute. The pitcher threw his glove on the ground and is stamping on it. I don't blame him, inasmuch as he's just walked two normal-sized men. Now he has a man at the plate who couldn't be more than 15 inches between his knees and his shoulders.
Fly ball!
The catcher is towering over the batter like the Washington Monument. Wait a minute. I have never seen anything like this. The plate umpire started standing on his tiptoes. Now he tries bending down. Nothing seems to work. Oh, this crowd is going mad. Well, he has a stance that no one has ever seen on a ball field before. The umpire is squatting on his haunches. All right, here's the first pitch. Ball one. That was 2 feet over DeMonco's head. The catcher is going out to the mound now to talk to the pitcher. He hands him the ball. Comes back to the plate. And now, here's the pitch. Side armor. Ball two. Well, that one was a little closer. With a normal-sized man, I think it would have been a strike. With DeMonville, it was about a foot and a half above his head. The catcher is going out to the mound again. And the third baseman has also come into the mound to talk things over. DeMonville is just standing there, motionless, with that tiny bat over his shoulder. But he's blowing smoke rings. Well, here comes the catcher back. Boy, he gave DeMondel a look like he would like to see him in a bottle of alcohol. This is really fantastic. The runners on the bases have sat down on the bag. All right, ready for the next pitch. Here it comes. This is the slowest ball I've ever seen pitched. Coming, slow. I believe it's going to be a... Oh, no! He hits the ball!
Fair ball!
The ball is rolling slowly down toward third. The infield is coming in fast. DeMonville is running toward first. The runners are up from their bases and are coming in. I think the catcher has the ball. No, he booted it out past the pitcher's box. The pitcher is falling on his face trying to stop it. I believe the shortstop has it. DeMonville still running toward first. The shortstop kicks the ball and it's rolling toward second base. The runners are all in. DeMonville still running toward first, still 20 feet from the bag. The second baseman has finally gotten the ball, and here's the throw. Yeah.
Everything has broken loose down there on the field, and I'm going to try to pick up Ted. Ted, come in, come in.
Here I am, Dell, down here by first. Pandemonium's broken loose. Here comes McGrew, running with tears streaming down his face. I'll try to pick this up, Dell.
Well, what are you doing? Well,
I had to hit it, Mr. McGrew. That's it.
A man, huh? Well, there's one man instead of throwing up a man right out of the ballpark.
Back up here in the press box. This is amazing. It looks like McGrew is swinging his batter around like a hammer thrower. And it looks like Dumontville is the hammer. Nobody can get near him without getting his head knocked off. And now he lets him go. And it looks like Dumontville is headed for the soap sign in center field. And there goes the St. Louis center fielder on a dead run. Back, 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 trying to get under Dumontville. And he's got him. Out!
As he ran out of the ballpark, he looked like one of those dash hounds with a satchel in his mouth, still smoking that big cigar. Yep, that was the end of Dumontville, and that was the end of our losing streak, too. When we got in the locker room that day, we couldn't look at each other. And suddenly we all started laughing and kidding, and I quit complaining and wishing I was with the Angels. Well, sir, we went on to Chicago and took all four games. Got 17 hits in the first game. Poor old St. Louis. They were so shook up by that last game with us, they never did hit the stride again. Their center fielder who caught Pearl, well, he took to misjudging everything that come his way. The rest of the team followed suit. That's the way it is when a club one guy blows up. Well, sir, the boys all went together and bought a pair of them little baby shoes. Got them golden. Give them to me as a souvenir. Great guys. Whitey Billy made up. We come home like a ton of dynamite. Went on to win that pennant.
Quite a story, Mr. McGrew.
Yeah, it happened about 25 years ago. Suppose it seems like a long time ago to you, boy, but to me it seems just like yesterday. Bugs Courtney is standing up at the players' dinner and saluting what he called the greatest man and a half in baseball, me and Pearl Dumontville. You see, Pearl was right. We did kind of make history. And Larry, all this is in the record books. If you don't believe it, you could look it up.
You've been listening to the CBS Radio Workshop, presenting James Thurber's You Could Look It Up. Written, produced, and directed for radio by D. Engelbach. Music by Richard Heyman. Heard in our cast were Ralph Bell, Sarah Fussell, Larry Haynes, Harold Huber, Joe Julian, David Kerman, Del Sharpett. The CBS Radio Workshop has come to you from New York. This is Ted Pearson speaking. You hear America's favorite shows on the CBS Radio Network.
The CBS Radio Workshop on Tuned to Yesterday from the 7th of July, 1957. That wouldn't be the first time that story from James Thurber would be adapted on radio. It was first heard in 1944 on the favorite sports stories of Grantland Rice, and again in 1949 on the program that author James Hilton hosted, The Hallmark Playhouse. It's an hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday by Mark LeVelnier. Now time for a play that first made its way on the Broadway stage with Humphrey Bogart in the opening night cast, then into a motion picture with Bogart in 1936. It's an adaptation of Robert Sherwood's The Petrified Forest, adapted by radio writer Arch Obler. First heard on the Everything for the Boys program on January 18, 1944 on NBC.
This is Ronald Coleman. On behalf of my sponsor, the Electric Autolite Company, we present this special first edition recording of the premiere of our new radio show, Everything for the Boys. We who shared in this inaugural performance hope that your enjoyment of it will equal our own pleasure in bringing it to you. Thank you.
From Hollywood, California, and the bomber base in England, Autolite brings you Everything for the Boys, the command theater of the air, starring Mr. Ronald Coleman and his guest for tonight, Miss Ginger Rogers. The play, Arch Obler's radio dramatization of The Petrified Forest.
Two American flyers are waiting for this broadcast in the shadow of a flying fort at a bomber base a few miles outside of London. Soon, these boys will leave for another bombing mission on Hitler's crumbling European fortress. Our famous guest for this evening, Miss Ginger Rogers, and I are going to speak by special overseas radio directly to these men. But before that, at their express command, we are going to bring to them and to you the first of our great plays. Gentlemen of the Army Air Forces, we're at your command. A message to you sitting at home, awaiting this play about to be sent to two boys, perhaps your own sons, at that bomber base overseas. I want you to think of a young lady about 4 years old. She has pigtails, and in her hand is the last tubby little bit of an ice cream cone. On her face, besides the ice cream, is the expression that comes to all children when they meet the realization that the ice cream cone must once more become a thing to be dreamed of and not a fact. Men die for things like that. Die so that their children can face squarely the enormous problem of ice cream. A marble rolled down the drain. A kite that got stuck in a tree. You and I are being given today a golden opportunity of seeing to it that the fathers of these children will soon be flying that first kite with their son or handing that ice cream to their small daughter. Today, America begins to pour its entire strength into a drive to raise $14 billion for fighting equipment for these men. This is our opportunity to say to the father of that little lady, I know what you expect of me. I will buy bonds in the fourth war loan drive. Yes, all of us, every one of us will back the attack.
Our command play, Robert Sherwood's classic, The Petrified Forest, as dramatized for radio by Arch Obler. Our stars, Mr. Ronald Coleman and his guest, Miss Ginger Rogers. The scene, England. The place, a bomber base. The time, those tense, terrible moments before the takeoff for the target of the night.
More coffee, Lieutenant?
Thank you, Miss Gabriel.
Donuts, Sergeant?
Sure, thanks, Miss Gabriel.
How much more time is it?
Well, there goes the first section. That means we take off in 20 minutes.
Well, I'd better get back to work.
You're pretty swell.
What is that coffee you drink?
Oh, I mean it. Oh, you can laugh at me, but we fellows know what you've done in this man's war. You know, all these hours waiting, I've been thinking how many people in this world a guy like me is grateful to. War is hell, but... Well, yesterday over the channel, it was as if all at once...
Oh, please go on.
All at once, it was as if the air all around me was filled with the wings of those RAF flyers who died to give us today. So many have given... So much for us.
Long before the war began, there were some who knew the meaning of the word sacrifice.
Can I ask you where you were long before the war?
I was in a combination filling station and lunchroom in a place called Black Mesa, Arizona.
No kidding.
Black Mesa, Arizona. Where first it was day, and then it was night, and... Nothing ever happened, except one day, everything happened.
Good afternoon, miss. Can I order something to eat here?
Sure. Didn't you see the sign outside? The Black Mesa Barbecue, try our brew plate. What do you have?
What is a barbecue?
Well, it's a... I mean, it's,
Why are you looking at me like that?
Well, I've never seen anybody like you before.
I am rather dusty and bedraggled.
Oh, I didn't mean that. Look here, are you just tramping along?
Just tramping along.
Oh, you're English.
Well, you might call me an American cousin. I am rather hungry.
What's your name?
Alan Squire.
My name's Gabriel Maple. Glad to meet you.
How do you do? Miss Gabrielle, I'm really very hungry. Could you please?
Oh, I'm sorry. One hamburger coming up.
I say, young fella, would you like to see a picture of that Duke Mantee? I got a paper.
Why, yes.
Quite a fella, Duke Mantee, isn't he?
Great Scott, you mean to say this man killed 6 people?
Him and his friends did when they sprung up from the law.
He doesn't look very vicious, does he?
Oh, you can't tell a killer from his picture, except for his chin. It's a funny thing about a killer. Always holds his chin.
I don't think I've ever seen a killer.
I have. Plenty of them. Ever hear of Billy the Kid?
Oh, yes, indeed.
I know them well. He took a couple of shots at me.
I congratulate you on still being with us.
Well, just wanted to scare the pants off me. He did.
Here's your barbecue, Mr. Squire. I gave you a little salad on the side.
Ah, thank you.
What line of work are you in, mister?
Well, I have been at times a writer.
Magazine, want ads, or patent medicine labels?
Your supper's ready in the kitchen, Gramps.
Hmm? Oh, and I'm ready for it. Well, pleased to meet you, Mr. Squire.
Yeah, pleased to meet you, sir.
Is your hamburger all right?
Yeah, that's a charming old gentleman. Is he your grandfather?
Yeah. I haven't met many writers, except one. He said I ought to go to Hollywood and be sure to look him up. What the devil? They never mean it.
I don't suppose they do. Of course, you want to go to Hollywood?
No. I want to go to France.
France? Why?
I was born there. You see, my father, he's over in Phoenix today. He was in the war, and he met my mother there. And that's how I happened.
Oh.
Mother's still there.
I see.
Yep. Some people seem to think it was cool of her to leave me, but... Well, she didn't have any money to take care of me. And she just couldn't live in this place. Do you think she was cruel?
Not if you don't, Miss Gabrielle.
She sent me a book for my birthday. It's the poems of Francois Villon. Look, isn't it a beautiful little book?
Yes.
When I read these poems, they kind of get the stink of the gasoline and the hamburgers out of my system.
Would you read one of them to me?
Yeah. You mean now?
Yes.
Okay. I'll read you the one I like best. Mine own heart's lady, with no gainsaying, you shall be always till I die, nor cease to serve, but serve more constantly. This is the end for which we twain are met. You know, that's wonderful stuff. But that's the way the French people are. They understand everything. That's why I want to go to France.
If I were you, I'd stay here, Gabrielle, and avoid disappointment.
What makes you think I'd be disappointed?
I've been to France.
Why are you here?
Europe's in a mess. Dictators, appeasement, and the inevitable consequences. I want to see America.
What are you looking for?
Oh, I don't know, perhaps. Perhaps an old man who had his pants frightened off him by Billy the Kid, and a very pretty young lady who reads the poetry of Francois Villon.
I think I like you.
Hey, cab! The sheriff just drove up with a car full of deputies, and he says he thinks maybe that Duke Mantee will be heading this way. He killed 6 people over in Oklahoma City. Did you know that?
Yeah, I know that.
Oh, okay. Oh, boy, I wish that killer would come this way. I'd sure show him
He seems to have an abundance of vitamins.
Yeah, Bose used to play football. Did you hear what I said a moment ago when I said I liked you?
Yes, I heard you.
Well, I'd do other things that'd surprise you.
I'm sure you do.
I paint pictures.
Oh, are they any good?
Criminy, no.
Oh, please let me see them.
Well, they're kind of crazy pictures.
All the better. I'd like to look.
Well, right, you asked for it. I've got a couple here under the counter. Well, are they that bad?
I'm impressed. Tremendously impressed.
Are you kidding?
No, Gabrielle. I've never kidded anyone. Outside of myself. But this is amazing work. I'm beginning to believe that you're amazing, too.
I want to paint pictures to make people think about other people. Oh, I want that. But I'm not much.
I believe you could be.
not in Black Mesa, Arizona. Now when I have to sit here day after day... You tell me what to do, Mr. Squire. You've got brains. I can see it.
Brains without purpose. Noise without sound. Oh, don't listen to me. I was born just too late for the last war. And now the world's in a mess again, and I'm afraid there'll be no new war to clear the air. So I'm an intellectual with no place, no faith, and no hope for the future. That's in the way of my life.
Where are you going from here?
Wherever the road outside leads to.
Why, it leads to the Petrified Forest. It's just a lot of dead old trees in a desert that have turned to stone.
Petrified Forest. Beautiful resting place for me.
I'd like to go away with you.
I beg your pardon?
I'd like to go away with you.
I'm afraid, Gabrielle, I could never...
You mean you haven't enough money?
Well,
we could thumb our way. Oh, you could show me everything. All the wonderful sculpture and painting and explain everything. And, oh, we could have a time together.
That's a rather startling proposal, my dear.
Wouldn't you like to be loved by me?
Yes, Gabrielle. I should like to be loved by you.
There's no use arguing with me, Claire. It's not going to get any cooler until we get out of the desert. Young woman, how far is it to the Phoenix Biltmore? Are those your best cigars?
Yep, Phoenix is a good 200 miles from here.
Good heavens. Miss, where's the ladies' room?
It's that way, ma'am.
Would you show me?
Yeah.
Haven't you got any better cigars than these?
No, sir.
I say, would you have room in your car for another party?
Who is it?
Myself.
I don't know.
Did you get your cigars, mister?
I don't think they're good enough.
Okay.
About that ride, sir.
You're going away?
Yes, I must.
Oh, please.
Well, George, have you got your cigars? Must we stay here all day?
Dear, this gentleman wishes us to give him a lift as far as Phoenix.
Well, come ahead. Let's be on our way.
Thank you.
You're always in a hurry, sir.
Well, goodbye, Gabrielle.
I must go. Why?
I'm a man who was born too late for everything. A man without a place. Remember?
I like you so very much. Will you remember that?
Yes. I remember. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
That's okay, Mr. Okay.
Hey, Gabby, did you see the swell car those people came in?
Oh. That fellow was just looking at your crazy pictures, huh?
Yeah, my crazy pictures.
Gabby, listen. How about us taking a little walk tonight, huh? Listen, honey, sweet. You gotta go out sometime. You gotta stop being afraid. You think I'm something terrible and you gotta keep away from me. Well, I'm not so bad, Gabby. I'm just a big guy with a good heart and plenty of hot blood. I'm full of love, honey, and so are you. You don't know it yet, but you are. And when we get out there in the moonlight, you'll be glad it's happening. Honestly, you will, honey. Sweet.
Yeah. What's the difference? I'll go with you both. Anytime you want.
Gabby. Gabby, I want
you both. Not
Gabby. Oh, Gabby. Gabby.
Oh, what?
It's that Duke Mantee. The killer, Duke Mantee.
All right. Get up and stand over there against that wall. You two up there. Get over there with the rest of them. Slim, come on in here.
Graham, yeah, Duke? Come on out here, Graham.
All right, I hear you. What's all the commotion? What? Who are you?
Sit down, you won't get hurt.
Oh, you're Duke Mantee, aren't you? You're the killer.
Sit down, Grandpa. The rest of you, too.
Mr. Squire, Alan, I didn't think I'd ever see you again.
Look at his chin, Mr. Squire. Remember what I told you? He's a real killer.
I should imagine he is.
He's a gangster and a rat, and he ought to be put out of the way.
Oh, stop.
You're talking about me, halfback.
I'm not afraid of you.
Better not talk anymore, Bose. Mr. Mantee is a peculiar phenomenon. He's a throwback to another age. A man like myself living outside of his proper time. The difference is that he knows what he wants to do and does it, while I neither know nor do.
What are you talking about, Duke?
I'm listening to. Thank you. Duke,
You know, rather than wait here for the police, I think you'd better come with me. I'm planning to be buried in the Petrified Forest. I've been espousing a theory about that. If it interests you, it's the graveyard of the civilization that's moved out from under us. It's the world of outmoded ideas. Self-sacrifice, patriotism. The ideal of the unity of mankind. Selflessness. Fools like myself who believe in such nonsense are so many dead stumps in that desert. That's where I belong, and so do you, Duke. You're the last great apostle of rugged individualism, aren't you?
Yeah. You're right, pal. Yeah, I don't fit you. We are...
Duke, look out! Those dogs!
Then we are, the rest of you. Right, hair back. And we'll grab at me and next slug right through your head.
Hold your hand.
I had a chance to get his gun and I mucked.
Tough luck, Hairback. You, blonde. Take him out in the kitchen and fix him up. Slim, she's got him bandaged. Tie him up.
It's a pleasure. Come on, Harold.
Does it hurt badly, Bones?
Say, Duke, did you mean to hit him in the hand or was that just a bad shot?
It's a bad shot, Grandpa. I had to get it off fast.
Duke. Do you mind if I reach in my pocket for something?
What do you want?
I was traveling with all my worldly possessions on me. This insurance policy. It's my only asset. It's for $5,000, and I want to endorse it over so that the money would be paid to Miss Gabrielle, that young lady in there.
By all that's holy, he's drunk.
Duke, if these fine, substantial citizens, Mr. and Mrs. Chisholm here, witness my signature, I'm sure the endorsement of the policy over to Miss Gabrielle would be legal.
Okay.
Thank you. Would you sign here, Mr. Chisholm?
Do you realize what you're doing?
I do. Thank you for your signature. Mrs. Chisholm?
Yes, I'll sign.
Thank you.
You're in love with her, aren't you?
Perhaps
I am.
It don't mean a thing. He ain't gonna die. Insurance policy's no good to her. He ain't gonna die.
I believe that's where you're wrong, Gramp.
Hmm?
You, listen to this. That blonde girl has heroic stuff in her. She has the energy, the vitality with which to fight the future battles. Why, she may be one of the immortal women of the France where she was born. Another Joan of Arc or George Sand or Madame Curie. I want to show her that I believe in her, and how else can I do it? Living, I'm worth nothing to her. Dead, I can buy her the tallest cathedrals and golden vineyards and dancing in the streets. One well-directed bullet will accomplish that. One bullet, Duke. Will you do it?
I'll think it over, pal.
Mr. Squire, you're crazy as a loon. There ain't a woman alive or ever did live that's worth $5,000.
Ah, you're a forgetful old man, Gramp. Any woman is worth everything that any man has to give. Anguish, ecstasy, faith, jealousy, love, hatred, life or death. When you reach my age, you'll learn better sense.
George, did you hear that?
I heard.
Gramp, that granddaughter of yours, you know what she is?
What is she?
She's the future. She's the renewal of vitality and courage and aspiration. All the strength that's gone out of you and out of me. And, Mrs. Chisholm, please don't look at me like that.
Well, all I know is I wish you were talking about me.
Duke, the road. I think there's a car coming. We ought to lamb out of here.
Yeah, the back way. Mr. and Mrs., whatever your name is.
Me?
Yeah, you and your wife are coming along
with us.
Now,
please,
shut up. Your important stuff. While you're with us, nobody will shoot at me.
But we were on...
For heaven's sake, George, keep quiet and do what he says.
Take them out the back way, son.
Okay. Come on, you two. Come on.
Well, how about me, too? Me, too?
You better stay right where you are.
Oh.
Alan, both will be all right. You can't... Where is everybody?
The guard, sister. I'm going, too. Better stay right here for a while. So long.
Duke, wait.
Alan, why?
Duke, come back.
Not a problem.
Duke.
Yeah.
What I asked you to do before...
You still want that?
It's no matter whether I want it or don't want it. You've got to do it. You hear me? You've got to do it.
Okay, pal.
Alan!
Try to do it so it wouldn't hurt, pal. And be seeing you soon.
Alan.
Gosh, Almighty. You really meant for him to do it.
Oh, Alan.
It doesn't hurt. At least it doesn't.
Grab, get something quick.
No, No, no.
That's right. Funny, isn't it?
What, Alan? What did you say?
Honey, I have to come all this way to find a reason to live and die.
Alan.
Gabby, listen. He's life insurance for $5,000. He said it was for you because you were... I think he said the future. Does that make any sense to you?
We'll bury him out there in the countryside tomorrow.
What?
That's what he wanted.
Oh. The sheriff. I'll go call the sheriff.
My own heart. It shall be always until I die. No, I cease to serve, but serve more constantly. This is the end for which we still are meant.
At this moment, two American boys at a flying base in England are waiting to speak to the folks at home. It's after midnight there now, and... Well, 1 minute. Hold on. Is that a signal from our engineer? Staff call ready?
You talk to him first, huh, Ronnie?
Hello. Hello, Staff Sergeants Cassidy and Badnin. Are you there?
This is Staff Sergeant Cassidy. Is that you, Mr. Coleman?
Yes, Sergeant. Is Sergeant Badnin with you?
Yes, he is.
Hello, Sergeant Badnin. How are you? Sergeant Badnin, are you there?
He's here all right, Miss Rogers. He's scared. He can't talk, and so am I.
Scared? You fellas? Oh.
Well, we've been on plenty of missions, but we never figured our next one would be to talk to Ginger Rogers.
Oh, I think you're very sweet.
I like you too, Ginger.
Who said that?
Sergeant Badnin. He's recovered.
Sergeant Cassidy. Our new program is Everything for the Boys. So what can we do for you?
Well, we talked it over and we were wondering, could you sort of let us hear the things we missed?
Well, what for instance?
Well, we've been feeding us fine over here, but ice cream sodas. Honestly, don't know a soda from fish and chips.
Well, what'll it be, boys?
Did we hear a double chocolate soda being mixed?
With whipped cream on top.
Well, no sooner said than done. Jim Bannon... Some ice cream, syrup, and soda water, please.
Three scoops of ice cream. One, two, three.
Oh, Mammy, show me the way to go home.
Well, there it is, boys. Now, what do we do with it, huh?
Have Miss Rogers drink it and think of me.
Well, I understand, Sergeant Cassidy, that you are very anxious to have us get you some information about your sister's new baby. Your very first niece,
I'll say I am, Mr. Coleman. I've never had much to do with babies before. Not as young as Connie Ray, I mean. Did you find out anything about her?
We certainly did, Sergeant. Connie Ray is as healthy as she can be and growing like a little weed.
That's good.
We also heard that she has your disposition.
Uh-oh, that's bad.
You have a sister, too, haven't you, Sergeant Badnin?
You bet I do, Mr. Coleman. She lives right there in Los Angeles.
How long since you last heard her voice?
Gosh, let me think. Well, all I can say is that it's been too long.
Well, then it's high time something was done about it.
What do you mean, Miss Rogers?
Just this, Sergeant.
Hi, Harry. This is your sister, Helen.
Oh, gosh, this is the biggest surprise I've ever had, Helen. Gosh, it's good to hear your voice.
Harry, I can hardly talk.
Come on, sis.
Harry, you know the folks... You didn't tell the folks that you're in the Air Forces.
Sure, but I just don't know what I can do about it.
Well, Harry, that's what I wanted to talk to you. The folks know.
What?
Yes, the folks know that you're a flyer, and they're terribly, terribly proud of you.
Oh, gosh, Tess, that's wonderful. That's the greatest news I've had for weeks and weeks.
Harry, there isn't any more time. Stay well and keep those letters coming.
I will, Helen. And to you and the folks back home, keep that equipment coming. And Helen, have the folks buy war bonds, will you? It makes us feel good to hear about it.
Amen.
Yes, I will. Happy landing, Terry.
So long, sis.
Say, we have a few seconds more. Anything else we can do for you, Sergeant Batman?
Yeah, there is. But I don't know what... You think I'm trying to be fair?
Well, all you have to do is ask for it.
Well, I'm not married, and I was wondering, Miss Rogers.
Yes, Sergeant?
Would you... Could you...
Well, say it. Say it.
Well, could you tell me your private Hollywood telephone number?
Yes, I can, but not on a transatlantic hookup. I'll mail it to you.
Good enough.
Sorry, we've got to go now. Thanks a lot, Mr. Coleman and Miss Rogers.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Good
night. Good luck.
Good luck, boys. Ladies and gentlemen, the transatlantic circuit is broken and two American boys waiting on the edge of an English meadow turn toward their flying fortress. Two American boys. And if Miss Rogers and I have given them a few minutes of pleasure with our play acting, we are happy indeed. And they will all be grateful to you if you carry through in your task of providing them with fighting equipment.
Everything for the Boys on Tuned to Yesterday from the 18th of January, 1944 on NBC. And that brings the curtain down on this hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. Be with us again for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.